This is Luke. You are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Thank you for tuning in to my show, Elephant Loaf. We will be back with an interview in just a moment. In the meantime, let's listen to some French bossa nova. Was some French bossa nova, and we are now on air. Can you talk
testing,
a little bit?
Testing.
Whew. Incredible. Perfect.
This is crispy microphone quality.
Hi everyone, I'm Luke. I'm here with Jake today. Jake, can you introduce yourself however you would like to be introduced?
I'm Jake. Let me get close, get the bass in there.
Whoa.
I'm Jake. I am. Yeah, actually, that's it.
That's
who I am.
That can be it for now. Cool. What's a book, movie, or TV show you'd recommend?
Oh my god.
If that's where you want to start.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I want to, like, a lot of these I think are quick ones that I these questions. Book, movie, or TV show. Psalm for the Wild Built is a fantastic
yes.
book. You've read it?
Absolutely, I have. Oh. There's Prayer for the Crown Shy yes. is out. I haven't read it yet.
Yes, I have that too.
Yeah.
I have both.
I need to get on that.
It's about a monk and a robot who meet and they talk, and it's set in this world where post artificial intelligence and whatever. And it's fantastic. And it's just a short, very short story. Great beach read if you are
true.
In the spring break and want to read something on the beach. I don't know. Highly recommend. It's a beautiful, gentle, quirky conversation that is deeply profound in many times and also funny.
I don't think I have anything to add. It's short, it's sweet, but it is complex. It's not a you know, just because it is comforting and nice does not mean that it is
it is
simple, you know.
For sure. It's like it's comforting in a way that is still engaging and like challenging of kind of certain like held beliefs, I think.
Yeah.
Especially around environment and nature and indigeneity and things like that.
Definitely.
Which is kind of sick.
Yeah, which super, super cool. And it's also in this, as you were kind of starting to say, in this like solar punk type world we have, I don't know. I like that, and I want more sci-fi like that in the future of like humans have cracked the climate thing and they've got technology that interfaces naturally with the environment
and
the world.
Yeah, and it's hyper sustainable. And it's beautiful how like that's not actually the focus of the story, but it is just kind of implicitly in the world building is like this understanding of nature and humans' relationship with nature that has kind of come back to human civilization.
Definitely.
After this kind of reckoning that they've had with artificial intelligence and stuff like that, which is also like handled in a very unique and interesting way. Anyway, too much. No big spoilers for the book, but that's one that I'd like to.
No big spoilers for the book. A small spoiler is the book mentions offhand that there is a robot that is fascinated by stalactite growth.
Stalactite growth,
and he's just
watches
been
it.
He's just been in a cave for like 30 years watching stalactites
because he doesn't have to do anything else. He can just kind of chill and watch stalactites.
Yeah,
that is
awesome.
So sick.
Yeah,
we should probably get on that.
You
want to go to a cave?
You and me.
Yeah, just you and me. Yeah. 30 years.
30
in a
years.
Cave. Nothing.
Nothing.
Don't eat,
that's it.
Drink, just watch
the Plato would go crazy for that.
Yeah, he'd be hyped
as
well.
Yep. And let's go watch grass grow. Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess one thing I was thinking this on the way up.
Yep.
I realized, so like as we did all these questions, or as I was doing these questions, I was like, oh, like there's so much to write about. And I like actually wrote a lot more than what I actually ended up selecting. But one thing that I realized is like there was this part of me that wanted to perform today.
Ooh, okay.
Or like when I say perform, I mean like put on a show and be entertaining and be enjoyable and stuff like that. And I was like trying to think of the things that were the most worthy of being talked about.
Yeah.
And I don't think that was necessarily, at least in my answers to my questions, I don't think it was necessarily at cost of like authenticity
or personal enjoyment maybe.
I think that, and then in our conversation yesterday when we were talking about the show, you were mentioning that like some people find themselves like not as comfortable in air as they would have expected.
Yeah.
And or I don't know, just like generally like trying to do things that in normal conversation with them, you wouldn't necessarily feel would happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I was thinking like, I don't know, in order to not perform, like it might be valuable to, I don't know.
Well, because I have a whole range of people that come on the show, and we were playing video games last night while we were talking about that, and you know, you asked me what some of the best moments were, and I think what I neglected or forgot to mention last night is a lot of them were just kind of organic, you know?
Yeah.
And were just things that people brought up. And you asked me what made a good show, and I think that's a fair question, but like.
But you can't make it. You can't make
it. It just happens. You know?
I think that's something beautiful, but I also think that the people. I think that people who are, it seems to me like the people you were mentioning who like had really like that you really enjoyed and like the people you found that talking to was the most valuable or kind of or the most interesting at least were people who weren't necessarily trying. Like,
yeah.
And I think there's something to that that I thought was kind of interesting and maybe something that I wanted to pick your brain about is like, as someone who's done this for now, almost 30 shows in a long time, like a relatively long time, like, do you think that, were you trying at the beginning? And like, do you try now?
Like, oh, that's a good question. Very much so. At the beginning? What? No, at the beginning, I definitely was. Hmm. At the beginning, this was, and like, I think a little bit since, this was very much like, not an anthropology project. And there are a lot of things that I've done at Tufts that have been like very intentionally trying to integrate myself more on campus. Mm-hmm. And I think this definitely started as one of them because I came in during COVID, right? Sure, so yeah. Like it was hard. And I was in a tiny dorm with 16 people in it, you know? Yeah, and that was really my freshman year, sure. You know? And so I liked radio, but I had been missing in high school. I had these two awesome co-hosts that I did it with.
Oh, you did radio in high school?
I did, yeah.
Oh, that's sick.
And so I came to college and I did, I think, either two or three semesters, I'm not going to count right now, of a music show. And then I don't discover music much. Mm. And so I kind of ran out of all of the songs that I like.
You're like, it's done now.
And I was also feeling a little lonely in the studio and kind of wanting to talk to people.
Mm.
And so this, yeah. The other thing is we're in a club together that's called Beats, and it's this percussion club. And sophomore year was when I first joined it. And I, just like another thing that I did to very purposefully give myself an excuse to talk to people was... Mm. My first year in Beats, I would pick a movie, and then I would go up to everyone in Beats, and I would say, you need to give me a 1 to 10 rating for this movie. If you haven't seen it, you need to make up a rating.
Mm.
And that was fun, and it was goofy, and my way of finding a niche in the club, but it was also just like, I wanted to say hi to everyone once, you know? And I think this has been cool, because hearing about people's lives is really interesting, and a lot of this has been like everyone who comes on the show is a superstar, you know, and like I know that's the most everyone gets a trophy thing ever, my father will listen to this show and he'll go like, you know, but like I think it's so true.
But I think that that's also, I mean, and this is again another thing that I wanted to talk about today, which I think you kind of this is like a perfect example of this, is like you have a way of in your pursuit of of integrating yourself, there is a selflessness like that kind of is inherently kind of shines through. And I think I don't know. And so as someone who is interested in examining and watching people interact with and relate with other people, mm-hmm. including me, but also like as they watching them in their own element, I think of you as someone who is like very who's kind of like an inbuilt knack for bringing people out of their kind of their comfort zones and out of their shells while also applauding them and making them feel comfortable doing so. And I think that, like, I guess I wonder if this is a
like space for that.
Yeah, I think it definitely is a space for that. And is it something that do you find that by doing that for other people that you
it helps me.
Like you come out as well.
Absolutely. It's there's like, so I don't have a Tumblr, but I really like reading Tumblr posts that have been screenshot on other.
That's fantastic.
There's one that talks about like the mom friend reflex.
Yeah.
Of as soon as someone else is nervous about doing something, that kicks something into gear of like, oh, I have the most confidence in the world right now.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like seeing someone not want to engage, it's very easy for me to go, there's no reason why, yeah, why they shouldn't.
I actually have a very similar, you know? Like, I'm the kind of person who, like, initiating something is scary, but as soon as someone else wants to do something, and I have the chance to, there is something kind of, maternal about it, which maybe is dangerous, but
I don't think it's bad.
Yeah, but like there is like something really like, or maybe it's paternalistic, but it's like if you're worried about it and I'm worried about it, we shouldn't, like, you shouldn't be worried about it, and if you shouldn't be worried about it, then I shouldn't be worried about it, so I'm gonna do it and then you'll do it.
No, that's really real.
And so does that, now do you find that, but I guess this is practice now, right? Like you've done, or this has been practice, you've now been doing this for a while, do you find that you can now apply, I don't know, the things you've learned from talking to people in this like kind of very intimate setting to your kind of general, like does this show and by extension like your kind of other experiments with social integration turn into kind of practicable or applicable skills outside of just their kind of microcosm or their little...
That's interesting. I think... in theory, yes, and I would like it to embolden me in other ways more. Mm. And I think it should, and there's no reason why it shouldn't, but I do think there is a comfort in welcoming someone into a space that you are familiar with.
Yeah.
You know? And there is a lot of confidence and self-assuredness there, you know? And sometimes if... I keep bringing up badminton out of nowhere, but if it were something that I was less comfortable with, it's hard to go like, oh, hey, like, unless you're in a group of people that are all new to something, it's hard to, like, get in there with me, and it's something that you've never done.
Yeah, you're just as new, and you're all saying, come join me.
And that works when no one's ever done it before, and...
I completely understand what you're saying.
Figuring out when you can let yourself buy in like that is really interesting.
Mm. Yeah, there's something you said about like being in your element makes you far more capable of
doing that.
Yeah, of and also inviting people into your element.
Real.
Like if you've been in your element for a minute, you can. It's not too difficult to integrate someone else in, right? Whereas if it's something new and you're expected to be, and you're the initializer of whatever it is, whether it's a radio show or a sport or a new experience or whatever, like if you're not as experienced, then I think there's like an inherent, like, people look to you, and if you feel as though you can't hold your own, then it can be a little bit stressful.
It can definitely be, because it's a different situation if you're not as comfortable with whatever's going on. I wanted to ask, very much in the same vein, I remember you telling me within the last year that you went to a gas station with a sign that said, like, talk to me and I'll give you a buck or something, something along those lines. Can you both refresh me of the specifics of that? I'd also like to talk about how it went.
Yeah, I would love to. Yeah, so I went with one of my best friends from back home, who actually goes here. His name is Kevin. And he and I went out to a gas station, and I got this like 5-foot by 4-foot sign, and basically we sat down in a food court, and this is a gas station like in the middle of nowhere. It's like an hour and a half out of here in Charlton, which is like on the way to New York.
Okay, Western Mass.
Yeah, it's like right on the border of Connecticut, Western Mass. I'm not sure if it's which one it's in.
Sure, but
it's relatively close. And we sat down and we just kind of set up our sign, and the thinking was like, it was like everyone, no matter who you are, has to pee, get food, and get gas, right?
True.
And so if you are driving from New York to Boston, which is a bajillion people, and this was on New Year's Day, New Year's Eve, or whatever.
Whoa.
Like, or New Year's Day. It was like either the New Year's Day or New Year's Day after. I don't know. One of the two. So people were coming back from their celebrations and kind of returning. So there was tons of kind of traffic going through the area, and we were kind of like, okay, well, given how wide of a variety of people drive from these kind of places, like, you're gonna get a pretty representative slice of the Northeast region of America if you sit down instead of a sign where everyone has to stop, because like it's the only place in a 30 mile radius that has like anything that you might need on a car trip. And so we sat down and we talked to people for like 7 hours and gave them all a dollar if they sat down. And
yeah,
it was incredible. And the funny thing is, like, and I was actually just texting him today about doing it again because we're thinking about doing it over spring break. And I don't know if it's going to happen, but the funny thing is that, like, that is easily like a highlight of my entire life. Like,
real.
Like, it was one of my favorite days that I've ever had in terms of like, I can remember so many of the stories and the people that sat down and like talked to us, and like, they were just like some of the most, I don't know, there were some of them people had like incredibly inspiring stories or interesting stories or mundane stories, but it was just like a kind of beautiful collection of experiences that were, as my kind of my hypothesis suggested, like completely diverse and like kind of representative of all these different backgrounds and kind of ranges of experiences. And I don't know, I really enjoyed that day. I guess
you get people who were opening up to you
in a really real way, which is kind of wild. I mean, so one of our philosophies going into it was like, ask questions about the person and don't really give too much of yourself.
And at
first we were like trying to like kind of think up goofy questions that would kind of like have surface level answers to kind of get break the ice. But then we realized that like, that's not really what this is about. Like, at the end of the day, we're trying to like know people.
Yeah.
And to know people, you ask them, who are they?
Yeah. Real.
And like, and so we did, we ended up saying, like, when people sat down, they would be like, oh, what's this for? And they'd ask us like, is it a research project? Are you recording this? Are you like, is this for school? And we'd be like, no. We're just like kind of sitting and chatting. This is completely off air, off record, whatever. And then they said, well, then why are you doing this? And we're like, we want to know about you. And we would just say, who are you? And then people, I think that it's amazing that like, I think it's also, there's something to be said about being strangers and not being known, but also being relatively welcoming and warm.
Oh, absolutely.
But like, people would sit down and talk to us for hours, like one, two, like we had people who sat down for 2.5 hours and would, and then start interviewing guests with us. And like, it just because, and that was perfectly fine because it wasn't like we had an agenda or we had something we had set up. And there's a point where there's like 10 people around a table, all from different families and or different groups. Mm-hmm. Like, and one of them was traveling to Kentucky from Massachusetts to like get a stray dog that they learned about that morning. And then the other, there's like one family, or like there's, it was mother or father and daughter combo. The daughter was a dance journalist and the father was this like kind of, he was a marketing professor at like University of Poughkeepsie or something like that.
Sure.
But then in his summers, he would go to the Aztec and Incan ruins and study their temples. And he wrote like multiple books about how the Aztecs and the Incans were a time traveling cult. And he had like a 57 part YouTube series.
Yeah.
Which was just him in the corner of a Zoom call and a PowerPoint presentation, talking about his findings.
Wow.
And it was an incredible dichotomy because like this, the daughter was like this kind of like level headed and like kind of, somewhat quiet, but like obviously very intelligent and like kind of for all intents and purposes like normal kind of person. And then here's this like incredibly eclectic father who's like obviously very loving of her daughter, but also like you can tell that she's just kind of embarrassed the whole time because he's just like talking about this like kind of really out there theory. And we were all sitting down together, and then there was this group of like four college age students who had repurposed a school bus, painted it blue, turned the entirety of the inside into like a basically a house, and we're like going on a huge road trip.
Love people like this.
And so, but like even in that like in that kind of collection of people, there was such range, and so and it was just incredible because we got to like sit down and they all exchanged information. And actually like the dance journalist and the mother of the family that was going to get this dog in Kentucky ended up exchanging information, and the mother happened to be like a world-renowned mycologist and mushroom studier.
Yeah.
And she would take like celebrities on foraging excursions.
Yeah.
And she was specifically like really close with Kindi Wiley, who is the person who painted the presidential portrait of Barack Obama. And like a bunch of other, like, he's like a really famous artist, and he paints a lot of like kind of black figures in American kind of pop culture, yeah, and or just kind of American history. And so they were really close, and then she invited Lydia, the dance journalist, out to a foraging event to like help her network, because like a lot of the times, yeah, like she'll take like up and coming dancers or artists on these foraging excursions. And so then I a month or two ago, I see on this mycologist story like Lydia, who they, yeah, met at our table, like,
wow,
like meeting up and going on this kind of excursion with a bunch of like kind of models and celebrities and stuff like that.
That's crazy.
It was super wild.
That's awesome.
And so I don't know, I think it's so cool to it's so rewarding to like be able to create a space, whether it's at a radio station or in a food court, that, yeah, like allows for people to make connections like that are so that are like meaningful and impactful, yep, and deep, even if they are short and kind of insignificant. And so I don't know, I was really happy with that day and like enjoyed just listening, and I need to do it again. It's like something that I like,
yeah,
am constantly thinking about and like always like kind of in the back of my mind, because I have the sign still and I always see it whenever I go home, and I'm like, damn, gotta get back to that and like,
yeah,
I don't know, and do it. But
that's an incredible story, and I do think there's something very special about a stranger that's willing to listen.
Mm.
You know, of like, you can tell that person or anything in the world,
you're
never
matter,
gonna,
right,
see them again. and they also have no stake in anything that's going on in,
yeah,
your life.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think it like that can be such a freeing thing. Mm. You know,
yeah, yeah, no, I think it can be. I don't know. Yeah, so I think that, I guess there is, I find it so kind of valuable to be able to listen to people and hear their kind of their stories and do so in a way that is kind of non-judgmental and, mm-hmm, and present. And I think that like that was a practice of kind of like in that kind of space, in the kind of rest stop interview,
yeah,
realm, that was like kind of a radical approach to that, because like we were very adamant that we would not, or like as much as possible, we wouldn't incorporate any sense of self into the process. Like,
oh,
it was like,
okay,
kind of a,
yeah,
part of our philosophy going into it was like, do not, like, regardless of their opinions, because obviously like
not being passive, but like letting it wash over you.
Yeah. And yeah. Well, I think maybe being passive was like kind of part of it, was like,
yeah,
just be like, allow them to talk and listen and like,
yep,
like, and not like, it's not like you had no personality, but more so. And like, there were times where we would like, especially if someone was like, I don't know, if people were kind of trying to, like, there was times where people were arguing at our table and we were like, okay, let's like,
whoa,
slow this down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But for the most part, it was like, we just kind of like let people do their thing and like, mm-hmm, and chat with us and listened kind of non-judgmentally, regardless of whether or not we had something to say about it. And,
yeah,
I don't know. And it was something that was like really, I think, freeing. And although I don't think is necessarily like, I don't think that kind of radical passivity is the way to like go about your everyday life,
sure,
but in like that kind of small experiment, like this vacuum of,
yep,
this kind of experiment, it was really interesting to just see kind of people be as raw as you can meet, like as you can,
as
be
open as,
yeah,
possible, yeah,
at least when they're talking to a stranger. And I don't know, there's something to be said about, and I guess like the philosophy that everyone has a story, which is, I think, something that kind of is, this like show is predicated on, is,
yeah,
was kind of, I think, realized and like very set in me in that process. And I think that that's like super cool. And I kind,
yeah,
of have taken that with me as much as I can.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You want to stay on this? You want to dive into something else? Time,
yeah,
for a song or an announcement?
Let's do why don't we do a song and then move somewhere else?
Sounds like a plan.
Sounds good.
Anything in mind, or do you want me to pick?
Can we do Easier Said Than Done? Or I don't know if that's,
yeah, 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 we can. All right. And who's that by?
Oh, goodness. The Sacred Souls?
Absolutely. Nice. Enjoy. We'll be right back. And we're back. Got just a little bit carried away while the song was going on, but not too bad. Let's real quick talk about hand washing. You can take the lead, or I can take the lead.
About hand washing.
All right, start there and go all the way to the bottom.
Phenomenal. So this is a quick hand washing PSA. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control's top tip for fending off the flu, coronavirus, and colds is to wash your hands. To protect yourself, you should wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds, especially after going to the bathroom, before eating, and after blowing your nose, coughing, or sneezing. The CDC also advises avoiding touching your eyes, nose, and mouth unless you have just washed your hands. Covering any cough or sneeze you have with a tissue, and then throwing the tissue in the trash, avoiding close contact with people who are sick, and finally, if you do get sick, staying at home so you don't infect others. This is a public health message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Community Radio.
You're a natural. That was incredible.
Goodness, come on.
All right, and we talked a little bit about a question we wanted to get into, and let's see. It was sharing your candy. I forget which question
specifically we had in there. Piece of advice.
Advice, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so this is something that I've been thinking about for the last year, I think.
Okay.
Is like... So my dad is a was in process of like training to be a coach, like a kind of not like a life coach, but more of like a kind of career coach, I guess,
okay.
or like kind of someone who like helps people work through problems in their careers and or like kind of personal life in order to better their careers.
Okay.
Not like a business coach, because that's like kind of, I think, too broad. It's kind of very individually focused.
A bit more personal than like an advisor would be, maybe.
And not like a therapist, but someone who is helping with emotional load of careers.
Interesting.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And so, and this is something that I think he's interested in kind of going as he like kind of progresses into his career. He wants to kind of work with in that space.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he had, like he, there's like, there was this exercise, that he had, that he was like working with on, or working on with me. And he wanted, this is something that like he was taking, or like when he had like kind of practice sessions where he would like be working with people that he was training with, he would kind of go through it with them. And he was like, oh, I'd like to do it with you. And one of the, this is a tangent. Basically, one of the things he asked me to do was like imagine a billboard that has something that like means something to you on there. Like, and you drive past it. What does it say? And like he was like, but first meditate on it and kind of think about it. Like, give it some time and let it percolate, and then kind of tell me this message.
Yeah,
or an image or whatever. And actually, he had me write it down first, and then we kind of. And it was a collection of other exercises that we then kind of.
Sure.
Synthesize. But what I kind of was thinking about and what we kind of discussed was this concept of this message of sharing your candy, which is something that I think is like now that I guess it had been something that I had been thinking about prior to, but never really like had it in so many words.
Did he bring it up? Was that the synthesis of your ideas?
Yeah,
or
so
kind of where did it come
from? The words share your candy were kind of part of a sentence that like had come up through the synthesis process that I was like, oh, that is what the billboard should say.
Gotcha.
And so it's kind of like a joint process of like kind of creating this thing. But really what share your candy means is like, I guess for me personally, and it is a very personal, piece of advice, sharing your candy is compassion, like extended to compassion that comes from a place of generosity and like kind of extending your the things that you hold most dear and the things that bring you the most joy, give like allowing other people the opportunity to experience those as well in any way you can.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So for me, like I love candy. It's one of my like one of my favorite things to eat ever. And I used to, when I was younger, my brother and I were always very protective of our candy.
Sure.
And so I remember like, I would always get upset with him because he would never share his candy. And then I would never share my candy because he would never share his candy with me. And it just kind of created this, like, I mean, in very kind of, it wasn't like a hostile environment, but it definitely was not, whenever we had candy, it was actually not a good time because usually it would be spent defending it from someone else.
Yeah.
And later in life, as we like got older and kind of worked on our relationship, like sharing our candy has become much easier.
There's almost some like game theory prisoner's dilemma type.
Yes, exactly.
Of, like, yeah.
And in sharing, in being able to share your candy, being able to share my candy with my brother.
Yeah.
I don't know, that has signified and also strengthened, a change in our relationship and strengthens that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of realized that, like, in reality, sharing your candy, I mean, while literal, like, I do think that actually whenever I share my candy, I enjoy it more. I have less of it, and so I cherish that more, but I also cherish the fact that I can, like,
you've got someone to,
someone else has also enjoyed candy. And also, candy given to you is far better than candy bought.
Oh, 1,000,000%.
Like, I think if someone offers, if you see, like, whenever I see someone, like, who has a bag of candy, I'm always like, damn, I hope they offer me some.
Yeah. I mean, and, shit, that's a very good point. A Smarty with a friend is worth 100 Reese's Peanut Butter Cups bought alone at a gas station, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And so, like, I guess, like, whenever I see someone open a bag of Skittles, I'm like, oh my God, I would kill for 3 or 4 of those right now.
Yep.
And when they offer me them, it's best. And if I buy those Skittles myself, I'm not actually too hyped about it. Like, it's not something that I'm, like, I enjoy the candy, but it's, I'd much prefer it to be given to me by someone else.
Yeah. Interesting.
And so I guess like extending that, like obviously candy is one thing, but, the things that we have, I think, are oftentimes best shared. And that can be experiences, that can be material things, and that can also be like things far more abstract, emotional space and or capacity to listen.
Sure.
Like, there are so many things that I think like we can share that oftentimes we don't because we feel it's best kept to ourselves. And I think that if I find that living by the paradigm of sharing your candy is something that generally brings me more joy. And also there's a byproduct of bringing other people more joy. And so maybe it's selfish to like kind of, I don't know, be approach it from a kind of individualistic or like kind of
maximizing joy
perspective. But I just find, I find generally that like when I am sharing, I feel good and I also see other people feeling good. And there's kind of like a cyclical effect to that that is like, I think, generally positive for me.
I think there are far worse things in this world than to be like, oh, doing good makes me feel good, so I should do good. And I like, if that's how you get there, I don't care who you are. That's, you know,
well, I think that,
that's
like,
one way to get there.
Yeah, I also, I mean, and I think there's something to be said about like, there are many reasons why I think that doing good is important and is valuable. One of those things is that it feels good to do good and do things that you think are good. And I don't know, I guess that the idea of sharing your candy also kind of extends to, I mean, it's whatever, helping thy neighbor. And it is kind of so many things that kind of people mention, but I think that, starting with getting candy and giving it to other people is like a good kind of benchmark for practicing the kind of more holistic and broader kind of engaging with the dogma of generosity and like kind of I don't know. I guess I'm losing my word. I'm losing what I'm trying to say. But I guess
there's something bigger that you're tapping into.
Yeah, I think that there is like something larger that comes from these kind of small acts of generosity that can put you in a positive loop. And And I think if you are more willing to engage with generosity and with compassion, then oftentimes that is what comes back to you. And maybe there's plenty of kind of idioms and advice that say to do that, but I think that this is kind of the one that I found has resonated with me most.
Definitely. One thing about it that's resonating with me right now is the idea that it is your candy. Like, it's something that was already bringing joy to you.
Mm-hmm.
That you're not, like, it's not just go out of your way to help people. It's there's already something that you individually find positive, and you're just calling people into that. And I think that's lovely.
Yeah, this is sharing your candy. This
versus
show.
Just like, fair enough. Yeah.
There's lots of sharing your candy around. I don't know.
If you look for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, the things that I also think that the things I think of that are the most valuable just out there, like the things that I like the most are oftentimes, I think, instances of people sharing their candy, whether it's like a phenomenal teacher, who is taking time out of their day and or their lives to give that knowledge that they have kind of are obviously so passionate about to others, like usually a thankless job, but it is like something that can be so valuable and so important to so many people.
Watching a teacher nerd out about something they truly care about is really cool. And I also, like, conversely, I get a little sad when teachers go like, you know, this probably isn't very interesting to you, but I have to teach it to you. And like, sometimes that's a very humanizing thing to hear of like, oh, I don't like this either. But like, if it's something you're passionate about, don't downplay that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, come on.
I agree. No, I think that that's, and I think, there's something to be said about like the, I don't know, the amount of work that it takes to teach something and give something away like that, like give away that knowledge or kind of pass on that knowledge to someone else that is something that you've worked so hard for. And I don't know, I guess like I find that good teaching or like people who are really, really refined at any sort of craft that then invite other people in and allow them to kind of take advantage of that, of their skill to kind of like have a good time is like something that's really incredible, I think.
That's and, great.
I don't know. I think that's a form of candy.
Yeah. Candy's everywhere if you look for it.
Sure, sure.
Want to jump to another question? Or?
Yeah, let's do it. I'd love to.
Cool. Got anything you found interesting or been obsessed with recently?
Ooh. Yeah, too much. I was just having this conversation at DeWick, actually.
Oh, yeah?
I like really like computers.
Yeah, yeah.
You know this, though.
I do.
But I think that they're like magical.
We've tricked a rock into thinking.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I think that that is like...
What brought it up today?
I guess we were... So I was talking with a few friends about... we were talking about our studies and like one of my friends kind of posed the question like, oh, do you guys like enjoy what you're studying right now? Mm-hmm. And I was immediately like, of course I do. Yeah. Like, how could I not? And they were like, oh, that like, because I think that there's a lot of people who they're passionate about something and they study something that they feel is applicable to that passion that can also give them a career.
Yes.
And so like my friend was mentioning like she is deeply passionate about people. Right.
Yep.
And she cares about the well-being of people and the kind of immense beauty within people and therefore is studying economic justice or environmental justice and economics and like how those two interact in order to like kind of work with people who she feels she or people she looks up to and do something that she like is passionate about in terms of like or making an make an impact on an issue that she's passionate about, right? Which is the environment. And she was talking about how like she finds that environmental kind of people who are pushing for the environment and like kind of really, fighting for environmental justice are people that she's passionate about. And she wants to work with that, like work with those people.
Definitely.
And it feels as though economics is the way to do that, right?
Yeah.
And I think that like, I'm very fortunate in that like the thing that I'm studying is something that like just in and of itself I think is so sick. And so I was talking to them about like, and at first I was kind of like mentioning like, oh, I was like talking about how like, oh, I just think it's so interesting how we can like perform billions upon billions upon billions of calculations in a single second.
Yep.
And that can make something like this happen. Like this, the fact that you are hearing my voice over there, like just like 5 feet away from me in your ears. Yep. And also that you're hearing my voice wherever you are in the world right now is like,
shout out our 20 listeners right now. Yeah.
is incredible. Like that is a mind boggling thing to me because for literally the entirety of human history and everything before that, nothing like this was remotely possible. Like you were confined to the people around you and that is it. And you could maybe snail mail and it would take months upon months for a written message to reach one other person or a small group of people. Right.
Yeah.
But really like you were not able to reach more people than you could shout to, which, and now like there's no,
you can be connected with anyone at any time.
Yeah. And it's not just connection. It's there's so many things that we can now do. We can calculate and simulate a universe and like planets colliding in 5 million years into the future.
Yeah.
And we can play video games and we can call our grandma on the other side of the planet and like
learn anything we want at any time.
And the fact that that's happening and we can find cures to obscure diseases through like artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like
collaborate with people we've never seen.
Yeah. Yeah. And translate languages instantaneously. There's so many things that like are happening that are just small, like, and all it was just small iterations on really simple logic. Like it's zeros and ones. And somehow from that we've
made the most powerful abacus that anyone could ever imagine.
Yeah. We've also like we've modified the human experience in a way that is irreparable. Yeah. Like for better or for worse, the changes that this has made to how human beings operate is like unlike anything we've ever seen in our entire lives. Maybe with the exception of like fire, the wheel, and like, I don't know.
I'd throw the Gutenberg press in there of like,
The Gutenberg press is another crazy, crazy kind of revolutionary invention.
Or really any printing press invented anywhere around the world. Sure, but yeah. That's the one I thought of first.
But the fact now that like we have computers, like this is the advent of a new, like I would say also an advent of like a kind of a new era in human experience and like in the human kind of age. And I don't know. And it's so cool to now be learning about how we like how those kind of layer or those layers of abstraction from zeros and ones have been built.
Yep.
So we've gone from like, okay, if this and this, then this, right? And it's like really simple. It's like if you have a one and you have a one, you get a one. But if you have a one and a zero, you get a zero, right?
Yep.
And then from like very basic logic, we then built basic adders, which said if you have a one and a one, now you have a 1 0. And if you add another one, you have a 1 1. And if you add another one, you have a 1 0 0, right? And so we're starting to do like binary counting and we're stringing multiple bits together. And then from that, you can do, okay, well, if we can do multiplication, let's create a number system that uses the same ones and zeros, but now we have negative numbers. Now we can do subtraction, right? And then you do subtraction and now you have multiplication and then you have division, right? And now you have a basic calculator that can do stuff really fast, but you're not really like getting, you're not too far in like it's not like something that human beings couldn't do, right?
Yeah.
And the time it took to program a computer to do that, you could just do it by hand, right? Mm-hmm. Except for like really big numbers. But then we lost, then we don't have enough space. But that's another thing. That's anyway, then we start, we have like adders, we have subtractors, we have all that. And then we start saying, okay, well, now let's start automating this and maybe make it do some really specific task, right?
Yeah.
And so like in 19, whatever, 67, we sent someone to the moon on a TI-84, right? Like one of those kind of, like, I mean, honestly,
half of the phone in my pocket got dog to space.
We're talking a thousandth, like not even close. It was virtually nothing. It was it was rocks compared to what we have in any technological device that you have used in the last 15 years. And then over time, right, we keep adding more layers of abstraction, adding more general functionality, and we get things like word processors. And now we're starting to be able to type, right, and we can also print. So that's huge because now we can like we can write some words on a screen, right, and we can then send them somewhere else by a wire, right, and then have someone else see them really quick, right. So now like mail is becoming revolutionized messages, but also it's still like there's no internet yet. But then once we create the internet, then it's like okay, now I can send a message from where I am, right, to somewhere completely different, right. And there's cell phones, right. So we but now we can do that on a computer. And we can also send not just messages, we can send photos, we can send, we can start audio. To send lots of data, right? And then, I don't know, you keep going, you keep going, you keep going. And at some point, you get to where we are now, where we are literally engaging with, or like we are interacting with machines that we do not understand, like artificial intelligence that we don't understand, and they are speaking back to us, right? And regardless, like they are obviously made up of other humans' contributions to them, right? And there's lots of problems with that. But they are now talking to us. And that is like mind-boggling to think that we're there now. And to learn like how such humble beginnings have kind of, because those humble beginnings still exist. They are at the foundation of all of this. Like at the end of the day, it is still all ones and zeros and ands and ors, right? That are doing these insanely massive like computations at such speeds that it's completely incomprehensible. Like, I think that that's like something that is so amazing to think about. And the fact that we have exponentially increased the power of computers since like the time that they have kind of since their conception is mind-blowing to me. I was talking about this anecdote that I think is like really indicative of this, which is like I think it's called Lenz's law. Have you heard of this?
Is this the doubling thing?
Yes,
because I was going to bring up the doubling
thing. The doubling thing. So the CEO of it's not Lenz's
also,
law.
Just as a brief time check, we're going to start phasing out in about a minute.
I'll do this real quick. It's not Lenz's
law. But
this
is fantastic. Not to say that it's not fantastic.
Yes. Yeah. This marketing guy at Intel basically came up with this this pitch that was like, oh, like we've doubled the number of transistors in our processor in the last five or in our processors every year for the last 5 years, right? There's no reason to expect that this wouldn't keep going. And there was no foundation for this. There was like complete, like no scientific evidence to put this in. It was complete marketing kind of phooey, right?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it wasn't like based on science. And then at some point, we the next year it doubled again, and the next year it doubled again, and it just so happens that for the last 60 years, every year processing power of the most powerful consumer products have doubled in transistor count, which means that like they have literally doubled in the number of gates that they can use to do those basic zero and one calculations.
Yeah,
and so we have gone from like thousands or hundreds of transistors to billions, to the point where transistors are now reaching the size of atoms. So we will not keep going there, or we will not keep going on this like in this kind of straight line, because we literally can't. We cannot pack them smaller. Maybe?
Yeah.
We cannot make the transistors smaller
than our smallest building block.
Yes. Yeah. It would start being subatomic or quantum, right? Which is a
whole other thing.
Yeah, and that's where people are going now, because they're like, oh, well, we can't pack any more transistors into this like small space. We can't make the chips bigger because the speed of light is limiting us.
But we can make it a zero and a one at the same time.
But we can make it a zero and a one at the same time, and we can collapse those, but now there's probability and whatever. But I don't know. The fact that that's the case, and we've now gotten to a point where we are literally making transistors and these processing like modules at the size of atoms is... I don't know.
It's crazy.
It's mind-boggling.
It's mind-boggling. That's a very compelling reason to study computer engineering.
It's so cool. Yeah. It's so cool. And so, I don't know. I would, study computer science or computer engineering or whatever the hell.
I don't know. Yeah. dude, thank you so much for coming on. Course, that was incredible. That was incredible.
Yeah.
Real quick, just to wrap up, I've got to remind everyone that they've been listening to Elephant Loaf here on 91.5 FM, WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. If you want to hear another interview, I will not be back next week, but I will be back the week after with our mutual friend Daniela. And yeah, thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you have a great sunny day. I hope you get outside. We'll do a little bit of a song, and then we'll be out of here for the day.
And thank you so much for having me, by the way.
Absolutely.
This is fantastic. All right, let's do it.
Cool.
Pois o samba está animado, o que eu quero é samba. Este samba que é misto de maracatu, é samba de preto veio, samba de preto tudo. Mas que nada, um samba como este tão legal, você não vai querer que eu chegue no final. Que eu quero passar, pois o samba está animado. O que eu quero é samba. Este samba que é misto de maracatu, é samba de preto veio, samba de preto tudo. Mas que nada, um samba como este é tão legal, você não vai.